Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with David Charchalis from Epilepsy Halton Peel Hamilton. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with epilepsy supports.
Okay, so right now what we're doing is we've got our big one of our big volunteer fundraisers coming up, and that's with the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, and we're involved with their charity challenge. And for this coming run for the 2016 run, we've been chosen as one of the three featured charities at the run this year. And so what that entitles us to is some free publicity. We also get a couple of a booth at the expo, the race expo on the Friday and the Saturday, which would be October 15, 16, and then the run is October 16. So what we're looking for is people to come in and support us, and either go to our donation page or go to our website and go through the donation there, or even to sign up as a runner, which they can contact me through at my email is david@stwm.org, and then we'll sign you up as a runner.
So, in terms of the booth that's going to be set up, is this going to dispense information about epilepsy as a condition?
Absolutely. At the booth, both at the expo and at the finish line, there'll be a lot of information about epilepsy. At the booth, a lot of our flyers, our programs will be available for people to take a look at and to just see what we do and how we do it, and just to have a chance to, support us, support the charity, support epilepsy, support our clients who have epilepsy, who've been diagnosed with epilepsy.
So, do you anticipate any challenges in organizing the run?
No, the run I've been organizing from our perspective, from the charity's perspective, I've been organizing our end of the run for the last 4 years. So, it's, we've refined the process now to make life a lot easier for people to sign up. So technically, I sign everybody up. They fill up my registration form. I do all the legwork for them. It's sort of my way of just saying, I'll make it easy for you because I know the system. I know how to do it very quickly, so I do it for them. Then I send them all their information, and then they just go. They can go from there. I make sure that my line is always open to any of our registered runners who want questions, or if they want to form their own little team within our team type thing. So I do all that. I do as much as possible for them to make registration and the experience a fun one, an easy one, and one that they keep coming back to year after year.
So in your time organizing the run and in terms of epilepsy work, what's been the greatest success that you've witnessed?
The greatest success for us last year with the run was last year. They have what they call a costume contest in each category. So the category of 5K, the category of the half marathon, and the full marathon. So last year I dressed up, I created my own superhero character called Captain Epilepsy. So I walked the streets of the 5K, I walked the streets of Toronto dressed up in this outrageous purple and blue, that's our corporate coloring, branding. I walked the streets of Toronto in this huge, massive purple and blue cape, this headpiece, which had about 50 to 60 ostrich feathers blooming out of, and the mask, the chest plate, the whole nine yards. So it brought a lot of awareness. We ended up counting, I think I was stopped about 172 times from people wanting to take pictures. So right then and there, that was a huge, huge success for epilepsy, because it brought awareness about epilepsy to the streets of Toronto. There's about 150 other charities in that same run. We managed to make it stand out where, hey, if this is about epilepsy, this is who they're running for, this is who they are. So that was a huge, huge success for us.
So what are the next immediate steps in terms of organizing this event?
The next step is, like, for organizing it as far as getting participants involved?
Yes.
So it would be, like, to contact me to, you know, and then from there, I take it from there. I will talk with people about the run. I will help them, you know, get accustomed, acclimatized to the run, to what's expected of them, what they've got to do. And then my phone, like I said, my phone line is always open for them to contact me with any questions they've got about the run, about fundraising, how should they, you know, even ideas on how they should fundraise, and different stuff like that. So we've got a whole battery of things that we've collected over the last, we've been running 7 years, involved with them for 7 years. Six of the seven we were running. The first year we did a water station, and then after that we started getting into the run itself and doing the actual fundraising charity stuff aside from that.
So, best case scenario, what would you like to see come out of this event? Best case.
Best case scenario, I'd like to see 50 runners with us right now. I currently have about 33 runners have already signed up, which is, we are well ahead of our target right now, being we're only in the middle of June. We started earlier this year. I started a push in March and April with that. So again, people coming back, we're well ahead of the game right now at 33. I'd like to see another, you know, 17 to 20 runners sign up. Our goal right now is a $25,000 goal. I'd love to see that, you know, $40,000 by the time this is all said and done.
So,
and I think it's a doable thing.
So if you could send any one message about the need for an event like this, what would you say?
This event helps to keep our programs and our services free for clients. So that there are clients out there who, as we all know, different, you know, categories of people who are both in an economic situation, we try our hardest through all our fundraising initiatives to make sure that our clients don't have to pay for the services, especially when money is tight and they need the counseling, they need the connection to community, and by community I mean the people who have been diagnosed with epilepsy, where they can share their stories. So our group sessions where they can, you know, support each other, they can get ideas from each other on how one person has handled something and then somebody else is at a loss on how to handle the same situation. So it's a give and take on that, and that's basically what it's all about. We're starting a brand new youth program for those 16 to 30, I believe it is, and that's a new area for us. But we realize that that is a lost area for a lot of people. We have our Sunny Days Camp for kids, which is great because they go up to 16, but now we're getting to the point where we need something for that age range, for that 16 to 25, 16 to 30 category, where they can come, they can meet, they can discuss, they can support, they can help each other. You know, we guide them along the way. We will set up, we have a whole program that we're working on this summer to set up. You know, so that's where it counts. It's just giving back and getting people the comfort zone that they need, the support that they need. That's for us what it's all about.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, perfect, thanks.
You know, folks, I find it just fascinating that this epilepsy group created a character to go around and to raise awareness, to do so in a way that would get people asking the right questions. What's this about? What does this really mean? Fact is, they didn't do it to be offensive or to shake up the establishment. They did it simply because they feel the public has a right to know the truth about this condition. It is not a curse. It is not something that a person wishes on themselves. and it is not something that should exclude them from the joys and the wonders of everyday life. They had this person going around, just raising awareness, spreading the word. That's what it's all about, folks. Getting people to look at things from the right perspective, the right frame. If a person assumes they know what a condition is, they're going to buy into a lot of the myths and stereotypes surrounding it. But if you get something going, it gets people to ask the questions. Do I really know what this means? Have I been looking at reliable information? You might start to create a forum. You might start the public wondering, is this truly the way things are? If we as a society buy into the perspective of any given condition, we're back in the Dark Ages. Simply because, in days past, people would say something like epilepsy, or blindness, or paralysis, any disability really, would be regarded as hopeless, and these people would not be able to contribute or live productive lives. But the truth of the matter is, we as a society have grown since those times, but we must continue to go forward. We must continue to raise awareness, spread the word, especially with things like mental illness or anything that affects the brain, really. I don't understand how it is that we as a society have allowed these myths and stigmas to build up in our minds. So a person might be subject to an occasional seizure. That's not something to exclude them from society from. So a person might walk or talk or learn a little differently. We have no right to judge them or exclude them for that either. We can't take it upon ourselves to create the impossible standard. Because if you find one trait to single a person out for, it's a very slippery slope. And you create an impossible standard. But by simple communication, simple questions, bringing just a little awareness to the world, you can break down those barriers. And I am thrilled to see that Epilepsy Hamilton Peel Holton has taken this to heart. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
The Green Bean Cafe is Windsor's independent cafe specializing in fair trade, organic, and premium coffee products. Along with our delicious coffee, we serve other great food and drinks, like tea, fresh baked goods, sandwiches, and more. Visit us on the lower level of 2320 Wyandotte Street, across from the new engineering building. Summer hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Get more information at greenbeancoffee.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from David Charchalis from Epilepsy Hamilton Peel Holton. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Melissa Miner. She'll be sharing her insights into disability life. So for those who didn't have the privilege of hearing our prior interview, can you tell me a little bit about your experiences with disability life?
Well, my experiences with disability life mostly is with my brothers, actually, because they were both born with some brain damage and are intellectually disabled, and they also have epilepsy. So just growing up with always being involved with the Special Olympics and that sort of thing. But I also have, there are some students out of the program I run that have cerebral palsy, or one has a broken neck. A teacher has a broken neck, and then one, and we also have students with like learning disabilities and that sort of like invisible disability stuff.
So how do you go about modifying your music program for someone with a physical or learning disability?
Well, like most of the lessons are one-on-one lessons. So in a one-on-one setting, the teacher can hear how the student progresses best and can sort of adapt to whatever the student needs learning-wise. Some students need super quiet spaces. Some students need to be around other students to teach in the small group settings.
Are there any modified instruments that you've seen?
Other than our violins that come in different sizes and our guitars that come in different sizes, I haven't really had too much experience with like modifying an instrument so it can be played.
So are there any challenges in creating a music program for a person with a disability?
I think the challenges are the most when it affects their learning or ability to concentrate. So like physical disability in of itself isn't really a big deal, but when students have like learning disabilities or even undiagnosed or unknown learning disabilities, it sort of makes it tricky because it's like it sounds like they're not practicing, but they really are practicing. It's just they're not taking in the information the same way.
So you have to look for progress in a different sense.
Yeah, definitely.
How do the families of these students respond to your work?
Well, the family of a student that we have that has cerebral palsy, her sister's involved with the DMI as a student as well, and the mom is involved with the DMI by being like a theory tutor for our younger students. So they're actually really involved and come to basically all of our events and perform and yeah.
So for the events and performances, the disabled students are in with their able-bodied counterparts.
Yeah, everyone is together, yep. Our recital next week, it's so big because we have so many students now that we're doing two recitals, one on Wednesday for piano and voice and harp, and the Friday for like basically everything else, the violin and guitar and rock band and stuff. And everyone does something.
Well, that's as it should be. Students with disabilities should be included alongside their able-bodied counterparts. Mm-hmm. It's a sense of community you're fostering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it really is, yeah.
So, what's been the greatest success you've experienced in terms of working with these students?
I think the greatest success is watching them work with other students. Now that we've been open for a few years, some of the kids have been there for the whole time, are pretty good, and are forming little ensembles with each other. And just like when I walk past a room and just hear people jamming and fooling around, like I love that because I love hearing the progress and I love hearing people play music.
For a person with a disability, especially one that has emotional difficulties, music can be a very soothing influence.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it also, like, the learning music gives that sense of empowerment, because the praise that a kid gets when they play at a recital or something, it's empowering, and it feels good to be praised for something that you're good at.
For a person with a disability, how it comes across is, doesn't matter that they might have something different about them. They're creating something beautiful that can be enjoyed by the community.
Correct. And we have teachers. We have two teachers who use wheelchairs, too. Like, it's just, there's no different treatment, I guess, in terms of, like, making things not accessible. So
if you could send any one message about the need for inclusion of people with disabilities, what would you say?
Well, from the music teacher point of view, music is for everyone, and that kids should be given a chance to try out different instruments to see which one that they really enjoy playing, and should be given a chance to learn how to play it. And that goes for any student, no matter which ability or disability or whatever.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
You're welcome.
In this next segment of our show, we'll hear from Dina McInnes from the Richmond Center. She'll be telling us about disability martial arts. So tell me a little bit about disability martial arts.
Okay, that's one of the programs, one of the many programs that we offer at the Richmond Center for Disability. We have a program that teaches weekly. It was a course fee of $8, and it keeps going throughout the year, though, and we have the martial arts school that comes and teaches our participants some of the movements that go along with Taekwondo, and they thoroughly seem to enjoy it. It's a very popular class, and we aim to hopefully not only for them to enjoy it, but also there's always a lot of physical ability that's used. They work on motor skills and dexterity and coordination, and it's supported by a school, a martial arts school out here, and it costs $8 per term. We try and keep it affordable for people who want to take the course, and it's very popular, so that we have our terms typically go 3 months at a time, but with martial arts, there's no break. You pay $8 per term, and then it just keeps going every 3 months. And people seem to really enjoy it. We have to do early registration because it's such a popular course. So
what types of disabilities do you most commonly see in this program?
We are all-inclusive, so anybody with a disability is welcome to participate. Many of our participants who come to our center are people who are on the autism spectrum. So, yeah, lots of variety of ability in all of our classes that we teach in different areas. So that's one of the fun and fascinating challenges that we have, and so that we can teach the courses that we offer to people at their level of ability so that they can get the most that they can out of the course. So we're open to all people with all types of disabilities. So
in terms of the martial arts program, is there any modified equipment that's used for the participants?
Not that I'm aware of at this point. No, there's no modified equipment, but what they have is instructors that seem to be very trained in accommodating people's different abilities. So they'll suggest different ways, saying if you can't do it this way, just try this way. And so they make it very individual for the person that has a special need, which is great because it allows people to participate to the best of their abilities. Then,
so in your time with the Richmond Center, have there been any challenges in regards to your work?
There's always challenges in that we're a nonprofit, and so we always need the dollars to keep coming in so we can keep functioning. We also want to we have ideas for more programming and so on, but because we need to have the dollars to support them and the staff and the space to support them. We're a fairly small office area that we have one room that is busy every minute of the day virtually. That's where most of our activities take place. We have English classes in there. We have martial arts classes in there. We have recreation programs in there. So it's a very, very busy room. So we would like to be able to do more than we do, but we would need the space, and we need the dollars to keep it going, and the manpower to keep it going too. To be able to expand a little bit.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the center, has there been any success moment that stood out for you?
You know, I think there's many. In that, I think we're well respected in the community. We are a voice to the city of Richmond to. And local government and businesses and on issues that affect people with disabilities and accessibility. So we have a strong voice in Richmond for that, and I think we've done well with that and continue to do so. We also have little moments in that there's lots of successes with our participants and their improvements over time, and it's nice to see that it's not often that people will go from like a grade one to grade two or go to the next level like they do in many of the public programs, but they'll improve in their own way in their own little bit, whether it be in communication or social relationships and friendships, and in their ability to be coordinated. We have exercise programs and so on, because with autism, the people who have got autism and some of the other people who've got different types of disabilities, coordination and body movements, it's hard to do. So they work really hard at exercise programs and martial arts and so on. And there's lots of, they seem little bits of improvement, but they're really quite big for the, because people are, it takes a lot for people to keep coming back and do it again until and see little, to celebrate those moments of improvement. So
what are the next steps for the center?
We are always looking forward to, we want to, we're looking at spacing and so on. We have what we have to offer, what we can offer in the space that we have and or space that we may end up in. So we always have a future plan. We believe strongly in the independent living philosophy, which means that we're supporting people with disability to have a voice, to say what they want to do, to make their own choices, and to do their best to understand the ups and the downs of those choices, and to take be supported in the responsibility for their choices, so they can have a say in their life. And we are always looking for ways to do that. We have an annual fundraising, a gala that we have every year. So we always plan for that. We're wanting to get our voice out into the community. We have some work groups that we want to create for relationships in the community with businesses and so on, mainly for support, and then also just for employment opportunities for our participants. And so there's always, we sponsor a bond spiel for wheelchair curling. So we are looking at planning that still, and every year we do that. So it's a, there's always something going on, and we're always looking forward. We're very lots of activity under that roof.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. It struck me when Dina mentioned about the support for the independent living movement. Many times in society, we tend to think of a person with a disability as needing to be coddled, needing to be sheltered from the realities, the good and the bad of life decisions. It's not so. Spend time in the disabled community, which is to say the community in general, as we are all one and part of the same great tapestry. What you'll find is there are people of all abilities, all intelligent levels, all hopes, dreams, potentials. You'll find disability, no matter what the type, is not a one-size-fits-all proposal. Sometimes a person with a disability, like any of us, needs guidance in their living. The independent living movement, she mentioned, is not about cutting people off from guidance, consulting, decisions. It's about helping these people recognize their own strength within the community. It's about empowerment, saying, just because you learn or speak or move a little differently doesn't mean you're not a capable, valid member of the community. It's about saying very publicly, these are simply part of the puzzle. These are people with the same intelligence, the same strength as anyone else in society. And like any member of society, they should have a chance to live in their own way with respect, and dignity, and strength. And it's fascinating to me, the work of the Richmond Center, that it's always on the go, which is as it should be. Having disability services and programs, that's fine, that's wonderful. However, they should always be used to their full potential. Individuals with disabilities should take time to see what's out there, see what they enjoy and see what they don't. Just experience life, my friends. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you, we're all equal, So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.